I'd always been the acting coach. So I spent years working with kids and then working with adults on their acting and building their confidence around that. And I realized quite early on, and especially when I was teaching the adults, is that we'd do like a 2-hour session and they'd come to me at the end and say that was like a therapy session. And it was like, well, there's something in this. And actually, I'd have kids' parents come up to me and say, oh, can you get my child an agent? It's like, well, that's not really why we do it. It's the whole point for me was to get a group of adults, kids, whoever, into a room and get them working together.
Podcast Junkies, episode 341. Welcome back. I'm your host, Harry Duran. If you are new to the show, thank you so much for checking us out. Thank you for giving us a chance, us meaning me and my guests and my listeners and the Podcast Junkies family. We are closing in on the year 10 anniversary next month, April 2024. It's so much going on. I have to really think about what I'd like to do. And it's coming up really quick. And I'm going to do something special, at least have a special episode. It's a really big milestone. And stay tuned for more about that. And so if you are one of the people that have been supporting the show since day one or since last week, I appreciate everything you do to spread the word about what we're doing here. This is the show where we seek out interesting voices in podcasting, get them to kick back their heels and talk about their shows and whatever else is on their mind. It's sort of been the last couple of episodes, almost like a podcaster's therapy. I've been getting really good feedback from the guests that they just enjoy this open format and how they get to talk about things they haven't talked about on other shows, and really a peek behind the mic is what I like to call it. In case you missed the last episode, it was with Patrick Keller for round 3. We talked about his history with podcasting, his early retirement from teaching, his views on spirituality and the paranormal, which is directly related to his 10-year anniversary as well, the Big Seance podcast. He's a really good friend of the show and friend of me, and it's always nice. I love this platform because it gives me the opportunity to get to connect with friends and really have these in-depth conversations, which I love so much. This episode, I speak to Jackie Goddard. We were connected through Ben Albert, who's a previous guest and a master connector of just cool people. Since having him on the show, he's connected me to several people who've been on the show or are planning to be on the show. And it's really fun because I get to know that if it's coming from Ben, it's going to be a really great conversation. And this week does not disappoint. In this conversation, you get to join Jackie on a journey. She talks about growing up in the streets of London and a change to the home where she lives now, which is a bit more relaxed. And she opens up about her career in fashion design early on, making her way into theater with the Royal Shakespeare Company, and eventually her transition to a more peaceful life by the coast. And so we talk about this, especially for me, because I'm sort of in that same journey. I lived in New York City several stints, grew up in New York, and now I'm in Minnesota, just outside Minneapolis, and actually just ordered our first chickens. So you'll probably hear me mention more about that on the show. It's going to be a fun journey, more of a homesteading journey. I've actually cooked a couple of loaves of sourdough bread as well, if you can imagine. So if you haven't been following me, obviously Podcast Junkies on Instagram for the show stuff. And my personal one is I Am Harry Duran. So if you want to get a peek into what's happening in my personal life, make sure you follow me there as well. In this conversation, we talk about how Jackie's early playground performances ignited a lifelong passion and how empathy and understanding are important to the craft of acting, and how she's brought that into her current world, where during the pandemic, she's had to learn how to start a podcast, and shares those insights and how that now becomes what she has on a regular basis with her show. As of this recording, I actually was a guest on her show, her live broadcast, which is always fun. It's a bit of a shorter format, but it's fun to be on the air, so to speak. And it was nice to see some of our past guests, like Amy Fagan, like Sam Sethi, like Dustin Miller, and one of my podcast students, Ellen Dorian, show up during the live chat, which was always fun when you get that engagement from folks as well. So it's been fun to do the podcast swap with Jackie. And this is really just an inspirational story. She shares her leap of faith into podcasting and the joys of teaching performance skills to a wide variety of individuals. As she closes in on her 100th episode, she reflects on the fun she's had with the podcast and everything she has planned for the future. So I love her energy. I love her enthusiasm. And I know you'll enjoy this conversation. Keep in mind that if you are enjoying this episode or past episodes, I'd love if you leave a rating and a review at ratethispodcast.com/podcastjunkies. I'd love to read yours out next. As always, these episodes are full of great takeaways, but just focus on the conversation. You can always visit podcastjunkies.com to read the full show notes for each episode, which includes all guest links as well. Okay, before we jump into this uninterrupted conversation with Jackie, a few words from the amazing folks that support this show. If you are ready to drive podcast listens at an affordable cost, then Trailergram is the service for you. Trailergram helps you discover and retain new audiences. Advertise your trailer next to relevant content on their premium publisher network, which helps build audience and engagement. Here's how it works. They advertise your podcast trailer next to relevant content on their reputable publisher ad network, consisting of over 10,000 trusted publishers, such as Yahoo, CNN, ESPN, People, and more. Next, the trailer plays. Audiences then listen to your podcast trailer and are prompted to opt in on their phones to receive push notifications from you about future episodes, creating a push notification subscriber base. Then, after listening to your podcast trailer and opting in to hear from you, the audience is driven to their built-in podcast player so that they can listen to multiple episodes of your podcast. As push notifications are sent, more episode listens happen, and your podcast now has a thriving subscriber base. Trailergram's automated system uses AI to send out push notifications several times a month, effectively marketing your upcoming episodes and amplifying the number of episode listens. Most importantly, as listeners engage with your episodes, your hosting provider will register listens as mobile downloads coming from a browser. Using their custom analytics dashboard, you'll be able to track trailer plays, ad impressions, and how many people opted in for push notifications. Get started today for as little as $500 by visiting podcastjunkies.com/trailergram and get started today increasing your podcast discoverability. That's podcastjunkies.com/trailergram. If you've been on the fence about getting your podcast started, I have great news for you. My newly updated course, Podcast Blueprint 101, walks you through everything you need to get your podcast off the ground. And best of all, listeners of this show will get 50% off. In this course, I'll walk you through everything you need to get your podcast off the ground. In section one, mindset, we'll talk about getting started, the importance of the right mindset, and how to think about continuous improvement for your show. In section two, we lay the groundwork. We talk about planning your show, positioning it, and how to go about creating a quality production. In the growth section, we focus on where and when to publish your show, how to promote it to the right platforms, and as an added bonus, some specifics about how you can profit from your show as well. I've also included a list of tools and services that have been helpful for me in the growth of my show. So again, the URL is podcastblueprint101.com and use promo code PBHD50 to get 50% off exclusively for listeners of the show. So Jackie Goddard, host of Power to Speak, thank you so much for joining me on Podcast Junkies.
You're welcome. It's lovely to be here. Thank you for asking me.
So we chatted a little bit about it in the pre-call, but for the benefit of the viewer and the listener, where's home for you? Where are you calling in from?
I am on the south coast of the UK. So between the sea and the forest, which is a lovely place to be.
That is nice. Was that always been home for you? Is that where you grew up?
No, I'm a Londoner. Okay. I'm from London originally. So I grew up and didn't move down here until I'd had my daughter. And we were just looking for somewhere less busy to bring up a child. So yeah, we ended up here, which is lovely. Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful part of the world.
For anyone who's not been to that part of the world, what's one of the highlights of living there?
Well, apart from the sea, obviously growing up in London, I didn't see a lot of that. Yeah. And actually the forest itself, this is an area called the New Forest. And I don't know, it's been called the New Forest since probably 1100 something or other. And so it's an ancient forest. Mm. It's a tourist destination. And I live nearby a Georgian town that has a sort of a little harbor and a river.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it's just a beautiful place to be.
Sounds very quaint.
And we have ponies that roam the roads. So they're not fenced in. They just kind of, they wander wherever they like, and cattle and pigs as well at certain times of the year. So yeah, it's quite rural.
That's really, really top of mind for me because you might be able to tell it's a bit rustic here from the wood background on behind me, but we're in Minnesota, so it's in the Midwest of the United States. We're on about an acre of land, and it's something new for me because I grew up just outside New York City, and I grew up and I've been to London as well. So I love big cities. I've lived in LA as well. So this is new, and we have turkeys roaming the property, deer. Yeah. But it's interesting, this idea of homesteading, and we're looking into getting chickens. and we're going to be growing some more of our own produce, and we do have our own well. So it's really been something that's interesting for me and new for me as well. And I'm wondering, is this new for you growing up in London or living in London and then getting to experience what sounds like a magical place where you are now?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I haven't got the chickens. I have friends that have chickens, and it seems like a lot of work, to be honest. I have friends that have horses, but I don't go there either. I've got a cat, and that's, you know, I can just about cope with the cat. Yeah. But yeah, it's just beautiful. I mean, as much as I possibly can, I will get to the sea and I'll go for a walk. Yeah. And yeah, that's part of my daily routine, is to get out and do that. So yeah, it was the day before yesterday, the weather was lovely. I mean, just glorious sunshine. And I just stood and listened to the waves coming in and going out and coming in and going out. And it was just, I mean, how amazing to be able to live somewhere like this after growing up, spending like 40 years more or less in London. Yeah, to move out and move here has just been lovely.
What was life like growing up in London? What's a highlight for you? I know there's, I'm sure, a lot of memories, and you've been in your profession for many years, like close to 25, it looks like, as well. So I'm curious what it's been like growing up in a major city like that. You know, what are some of your fond memories?
Well, I mean, I worked in the theatre. Well, that's not true. I worked as a fashion designer. I went to fashion college and learned how to design, and ended up working in the West End, designing and supplying very basic stuff for Topshop and Miss Selfridge and all the shops we have over here. I'm not sure if you have them in the States, but your high street run-of-the-mill shops. And it was a very, very dull job. It was not very creative at all. I did get flown to Paris, and I got flown to Dusseldorf, and I did all of those. But yeah, at the end of the day, they wanted me to go abroad and steal the designers' outfits and then adapt them for the high street, which is basically what I did for 5 years until I thought, no, this is really not for me. And then I ended up in theatre. So I then went and worked for the Royal Shakespeare Company as a dresser. So I was dressing actors at the Royal Shakespeare Company. So just being in London, I had all of that on my doorstep. So I had all of the theatres. I spent many years until I moved down here. In fact, after I moved down here as well, I was still commuting back to work in theatre. I went to drama school in the end to become an actor, and I did the Fringe. And yeah, so just being part of London life, and I do miss that still. You know, I'll get on the train from here and it takes me into Waterloo, if anybody knows that, right on the Thames, by the South Bank, where you've got the Royal Festival Hall, you've got the National Theatre, you've got the Globe, and then across the river, you've got the Lyceum. I mean, it's Covent Garden. It's just, it's all there. Yeah. So yeah, love it.
So what was the impulse to study fashion when you were in university?
I went to my careers teacher when I was 16 with my mum. And she said to me, the lady said to me, so what do you want to do when you leave school? And I said, I want to be an actor. She sort of looked at me like that, like they do. Really? She said, do you belong to a theatre school? And I said, well, no, I live a long way from the school. It's difficult. Do you go to theatre? Well, again, it's difficult. She said, no, you don't want to be an actor. She said, if you wanted to be an actor, you'd live, die and breathe the theatre. What else can you do? And I said, I'm not bad at art. And that was it. Okay. I mean, it was as close as I was going to get to doing anything creative that they were actually, I went to a grammar school and it was very academic. So anything to do with the arts, they weren't overly happy about. So I ended up going to art college and I was interested in fashion. So I thought, wow, that would be amazing. I'll be a top designer. I'll have runway collections, fall and spring and all of that. Of course, it didn't happen that way, but that's how I ended up in fashion. Yeah, and it wasn't until I worked at the Royal Shakespeare Company in the theatre that I thought, no, I need to go and do this. I need to go and train to be an actor, which is what I did.
So it sounds like you definitely had the pull early on. You had a different path for a little bit, but that pull was strong enough to pull you back in. I studied acting for about 3 years when I lived in New York for a bit. So I did some Meisner and I thought at some point I was going to do some of that. And then I just got distracted by another opportunity because it was the dot-com bubble that happened during that time as well. So I've always been very amazed and impressed, and I just love acting, the craft. I love watching a great movie that's incredibly well acted. It just pulls you in. Sometimes it's so good sometimes when you're watching a good play or a good movie that you forget that you're watching actors.
Yes.
And so that was calling to you, and it ties into something we'll talk about later related to podcasting, because it's this idea of expressing and finding your voice. So was that pull for you? Was that what was drawing you in?
No, I don't think. I think what it was, because I used to, in the playground when I was about eight or nine, I can remember every break, every lunch break, I would cajole all of my friends to come in and I'd make up a play, I'd write it, I'd cast it, I'd star in it, I'd direct it. And then we performed it at the end of the week in the class. And I think it really was I don't know if it was attention seeking, maybe it was a little bit, but I think it was just storytelling. It was just being able to pass on a story to an audience that actually they got something from it as much as I did. And I think that's what it was really. I think it was all about the storytelling. And when I actually went into acting and was training, then it was about the psychology of human beings, because, and I'm sure you found this doing Meisner and the acting training that you did, that suddenly you have to research what makes a human, you know, and why the character you're playing is motivated to do what they do. And yeah, it's just fascinating.
Yeah, shout out to my teacher, James Price. I wonder if he's still teaching to this day, but I remember him. We would do these repetition exercises and decide just back and forth. You'd have to say the same phrase back and forth to your fellow acting partner until you felt the impulse to either be annoyed that you were doing the repetition. But that impulse is really like the motivation to move you to do something differently. And so he would always say, you know, what's your motivation? What's your motivation? So that's bringing back a lot of fond memories as well.
Yeah.
How do you think it, over taking the classes, doing the performances, how do you think that enriched the way you approach life or engage with other people on the day-to-day?
I think because of that very thing about, you know, really digging deep into the human psyche and what makes people tick, is that you get a view of other people's lives. Yeah. And so there's a kind of an empathy that you have as an actor that you don't have when you are turning up and expected to be a certain way when you'd walk into an office space or you're in a different walk of life. And so I think you get to find out a little bit more about what makes a human and why we do what we do. And so, yeah, just being able to see things from somebody else's point of view, I think was, yeah, really helpful.
Was any of this inherited from your parents or other family members?
My dad is a stuntman.
Oh, wow.
So maybe he didn't start out, I mean, he didn't want to be an actor necessarily. He kind of, say, fell into it. Obviously, you do fall into it. But he became a stuntman in the 60s over here on TV and then eventually films, when there wasn't really a proper stunt register as there is now. You have to go through a lot of training now to be a stuntman. Back then, they were ex-army and military and all of that obviously come out of the Second World War generally. Yeah. And so he did a little bit of that and then thought, oh, perhaps I could do acting. So he actually did then go to drama school as an older, when I was, I don't know, I was about four, I think. I can vaguely remember him doing his course. And bizarrely, he was taught by the same person that taught me in the end, which is very strange. Yeah. So he's still doing that. And, you know, I remember him, he was always telling stories. And obviously, the career he's had up until now, there are a lot of stories.
So
I think that's where it came from. But it was almost not something I realized, because it was obviously something that was in me from when I was a child.
Sure. Did he ever bring you on set?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What was that experience like?
Well, the one that I've been told that I don't remember, I was 18 months old and he took me on the set of The Saint.
Okay.
And I sat on Roger Moore's knee at 18 months old. So, but yeah, I don't. And yeah, other ones when obviously a lot of the time I was at school, myself and my sister, we were at school. So we were kind of at home. But there was a couple of sort of summer holidays that we spent in Holland on The Bridge Too Far. Do you know that film?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
A Bridge Too Far. And then another one called Escape to Athena. Okay. We went over to Greece for that one. Yeah. So there's been a few. Yeah.
So it's safe to say that there's a bit of that runs through the family.
Yes. Now I think about it. Yes, there is.
It's interesting because the genesis for this show, I remember I went to a podcast conference and I had been studying acting. So I was a fan of Inside the Actor Studio with James Lipton. And I thought, how fascinating it is to see a discussion with an actor who you've normally just seen as an actor, so you only see them performing. But here, they're not performing. They're talking about their lives, and they're talking about their cat or, you know, whatever it is. And I was like, this is a nice peek behind the scenes. And so that was the sort of like the impetus for the show. I call it Inside the Actor Studio for Podcasters, because it's a peek behind the microphone, because obviously we give our most polished and NPR versions on the show. But a lot of times, you know, it's like the duck on the water, you know, all calm on the top, and then on the underneath the water, the legs are really moving fast, and you never can see what's happening behind the scenes or what it takes to get these podcasts produced. So it's funny to tie that all back to acting, which I thought you might appreciate as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the reason I started, I mean, I don't know if you want to get onto the podcast, but the reason I started my podcast was really to talk to people, because I am so fascinated by people. I just wanted to find out what made people creative in the first instance. The first podcast that I did was in lockdown, out of boredom, really. But just what a fantastic way to talk to, in the beginning, people that I knew that were in creative industries. They were doing sort of creative stuff, and how they use their creativity for work and well-being. Mm. And that was kind of where it started. But yeah, I was just being nosy, really. I just wanted to find out what made people do what they did and how they got to where they were, kind of thing. So yeah.
Was podcasting on your radar around that time, or had you been listening to them?
Yeah, I'd listened to a few. Before lockdown, I was a jobbing, freelancing, acting coach, and I was sort of, I'd never really particularly had time. So I hadn't got into podcasting. But once lockdown arrived and we were all shut away at home and all of my work dried up completely, obviously I couldn't get into a room with people. That's when I started really looking at podcasts, listening to TED Talks, diving into YouTube and all of those things, and really finding people that I wanted to listen to that interested me. Yeah. And I suppose what it was about November, I think, of 2020, a couple of the people that I'd met through networking, like business networks, I knew had started podcasts. And then I managed to make contact with somebody called, a fabulous man called Joseph Jaffe, who started in lockdown Corona TV, and he used to go live every lunchtime for the whole, I think it was 7 days a week for the whole of lockdown, certainly for the whole of 2020. Yeah. And he still does a podcast today. And he really inspired me. I got into a Zoom call with him and was talking to him. So that was really interesting to sort of get his point of view. And also just asking people whether they thought it was worth it, you know, for a business owner, somebody running their own business, to have the time and the energy to run a podcast.
Were you having these types of conversations before, maybe more informally with people that you admired? Or did you notice that you would have conversations with a colleague or a friend or a fellow actor that would just run on? And, you know, a lot of times in those early days, you think, well, we should probably be recording this.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that was the other thing about Zoom. I'd never really used Zoom before lockdown either, because I'd never needed to. So just being on those Zoom calls and knowing that they could be recorded, it was like, well, that's, of course, that's, why not just hit record and I'll upload it to YouTube. And I remember at the time, and this is only, what, three and a bit years ago, is that there weren't that many YouTube visual podcasts. Podcasts were audio only, you know, you just recorded the audio. Whereas I thought, well, that just seems such a waste to me. We might as well record the Zoom and then I'll take the audio from that and upload the visual to YouTube, which is what I did.
Did you find that a lot of this was sort of trial by fire? There's a lot of tech involved when you're starting a podcast, and a lot of people get overwhelmed. They have something they call pod fading, which is people that make it to episode 7 and then give up because they realize this is more work than I had anticipated. So there's a lot of kit involved, as you very well know. So what was that early learning curve like for you, and how did you get help along the way?
Well, you might be mistaking me for a professional podcaster, actually, because I don't have a lot. I don't have a lot of kit. I bought my microphone and I've got a ring light and a sort of a desk, I suppose, to put my laptop on. And that's about it. I did listen to people. I decided in lockdown that if I learned anything and nothing else, I would learn how to edit a film. Mm. And that was because before I started the podcast, I did do some Zoom acting coaching. Okay. So I had a couple of groups that I used to coach acting with, an adult group and a group with the adults with learning disabilities. Okay. And so before lockdown, we used to do terms. Yeah. So we used to do semesters. And at the end of every semester, we'd put on a production. Okay. Obviously, in lockdown, we couldn't do that. So I used to film the Zoom, record the Zoom, and then I'd cut it all together. Oh, wow. So for that reason, I decided that I really should learn how to edit, which I did on iMovie. And I learned everything I know from YouTube, basically. I just put in, how do I do that? Yeah. And YouTube would tell me. So that's how I started, really. It was just hit record on Zoom, make sure that people could hear me and see me, and just uploaded it and see what happens.
Are you still doing your own editing?
Well, I go live now, which makes it a lot easier, actually. So I do half an hour live on a Tuesday and it's done. Yeah. And then I do put it into iMovie and I kind of just take out all of the bits that an audio listener wouldn't get.
Yeah.
Because they're not looking at it. They can't see it. So that's the only editing I do. I do think I need to, because I do it on StreamYard and I do their countdown at the beginning, and I need to change that and actually put a proper intro and an outro onto it.
So we're using Squadcast, which was acquired by Descript recently, and Descript at Descript.com. What I love about their tool, and this is how they've made a lot of headway, is you upload the video, it transcribes the video, and then what you do is you delete the word or the phrase, and then the part of the video is deleted as well. So from an editing perspective, it's been really helpful. So if you can work with a Word document, you can essentially edit video. So it's pretty fascinating. And for newbie, I tried iMovie. Kudos to you for like learning that interface, because it's not the easiest. But for newbies, or something to try as an alternative for a quick edit now, for all of like quick edits of videos, I just drop it into Descript. It'll transcribe it. And then I just delete the word and it'll delete the section in the video, which comes in pretty handy. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's amazing. Yeah. I might have to check that out.
I'm noticing like a through line of being a self-starter, this idea of like learning yourself and figuring it out yourself, watching a YouTube video. Is this in your DNA? Would you consider yourself a self-starter? Like if you have to learn something, you just go out and figure it out?
I suppose, yeah, maybe it is, to use all of the experience and all of the skills that I'd already accumulated, but to move into that other space of actually coaching people and helping people to take that next step and to get to that point where they wanted to be.
Having had this experience of working with adults and children and adults with disabilities, what do you think is the biggest fear that people have prior to doing something like this?
Nobody wants to make a fool of themselves. Nobody wants to be judged or looked down on because they have done something silly. And it's just, for me, it's getting people to the point of realizing that once I've found, and a lot of what I do now is around the mindset. It's not necessarily about the voice and the projection and the articulation and all of that. It's not about the presentation. It's about getting people comfortable with who they are and why they're doing what they're doing. Mm. And that confidence, that becoming comfortable in their own skin, is the first step I have to take. So I have to get all of those limiting beliefs, all of those stories out of the head that somebody, I'm not worthy, I'm not, people are going to laugh at me. I'm working with a client at the moment who said she was worried. She'd done a couple of talks, but she was worried when she came off that she'd wasted people's time.
Mm, that's interesting.
And you say, well, So it's the work I do is really getting people comfortable with the fact that they have enough knowledge. They know who they are. They know why they're doing what they're doing. And nobody can tell them otherwise. Yeah. If they're being themselves and if they're being authentic and truthful and honest and all of those things, then nobody can catch them out. They're not going to be caught out, you know. And if somebody is not a fan, then fine. They're not the person that you want to be working with anyway. Yeah. Be you and attract the people to you that you want to be with or want to work with. So, yeah, that's most of the work, majority of the work that I do. And I love it because people really do come out feeling transformed in a way. You kind of have that confidence that they didn't have before.
What is that like for you to see that transformation happen in a person when they first come to you and they're either quiet or they're shy, or you know, this mindset that like nobody wants to hear what I have to say or nobody believes in me? And through the process of working with you, you get to actually see that transformation. So by the time they're done and they're ready to move on, they're a different person. And I wonder like what that feeling is like for you when you see that transformation.
Oh, it's amazing. It really is amazing. And, I have moments where I can see the penny drop in their faces. They're just like, wow, okay, I can do that. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And I know that because I've had that feeling. Yeah. I know how that feels to kind of go, ah, God, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
And I literally put a post out today saying that very thing, is that I had that aha moment. And so that's lovely for me to see when other people kind of go, oh, God, okay. So I can tell that story. Yeah. So people are, oh, okay. And really, it's only me as an outsider listening to people's stories and their experiences and giving them permission and saying to them, actually, that's a great story. That what you went through there, if you tell that story, it's not about you being self-indulgent and showing, being vulnerable and for the sake of it. You have that story and that experience, and you can use that to help other people. Mm-hmm. That story will benefit other people. That story will validate their own experience. And so those are the moments that I love to find in people, because none of us value our own stories. Mm. None of us value what we've been through really. And it takes an outsider to listen and say, no, use that's great. And I love that. And then to see people move on from that. You know, I've had clients that have come to me, they've got a talk coming up and we'll prepare a talk. They'll get on the stage, they'll do that talk, and then it gives them the confidence to go on and do the next one and the next one and the next one. Yeah. So that's fantastic. That's lovely to see.
Yeah, it's a reminder to people of their own innate greatness. And it's in there, and you just help bring it out in them, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
When did you start working with, is it adults or children with disabilities?
Yeah, that was, a few years back, actually. Yes, yeah. I can't remember when I actually started working with kids and adults.
How was that experience different than working with traditional students? I imagine there's a different set of challenges and a different set of hurdles that they have to overcome, but they're on the same path and end up with the same result.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit of a control freak sometimes. And it took me a while to sort of think, right, no, I will. I mean, they'd asked me a few times, the place that I was teaching, to teach their additional needs class. And I kind of kept putting it off because I was thinking, no, that I know how I get when I'm trying to put on a show and people don't do as I, you know, and they whatever. But in the end, you just go with it. Yeah. And that's the joy of it, is you just let them be. And you guide them and you say, right, well, yeah, we'd like to do, we'll do this play and we'll do, and if you can say that line, and then if they don't or they go off on a tangent, it's just, I learned to kind of just not worry. It's okay. It's okay. The parents love it. Yeah. The siblings, friends, whoever came to see anything, that's what they do it for. And I actually ended up working with a professional theatre company whose whole cast were adults with learning disabilities. And they have cast members that are in some of our soap operas over here and that are actually acting, and they put on their own productions. And yeah, so that's lovely to see.
Very nice. So when you started the podcast, did you have in mind, you mentioned you wanted to have conversations. Did you know it was going to be all interview based? And then did you have like a queue of guests lined up? I'm curious a little bit about your plan, because obviously I'm sure it changed afterwards, but in those early days, what your thoughts were about what you were trying to produce?
In the early days, it was almost easier because I didn't have as much work and I was recording it. So I could fit people in that whenever I had time and they had time, I could schedule a recording. Now the live is at a certain time every week. And I am working on other things a lot more now than I was then. It's harder to get those guests because they kind of have to fit into that slot. So I have to kind of send dates out and say, look, I've got these, this, 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 and this date. Can you make these? And I do like to invite people. I don't take unsolicited guests. Yeah. So obviously you and I have been connected through Ben, and that's fantastic. And I love that. So I will only take people that if I've been referred to. And the other thing is that I have now niched down into that I speak to people that are in the business of speaking.
Yeah.
So whether that's a podcast host, whether it's somebody that gets on stages, a keynote, yep. whoever. So the subject is sort of a lot more niche. So no, I don't have cues. I know Ben does. He does cues of people waiting to fill those spots. Yeah. So I kind of, there might be some weeks where I don't have anybody. And then I think, well, actually, you know, this is quite a nice opportunity for me to talk. And you could probably tell that I do enjoy talking. So every now and again, it's quite nice for me to have the half an hour and I'll decide what it is that I'm going to talk about. And I love the live because you get the comments and you get people interacting. Yeah. So that's great.
So a couple of questions about the production process, but I'm curious, how many episodes are you in with the podcast?
The live, I've done 42, 43.
Okay.
And Podbean, who's my host that I've been with since the beginning, has just literally today told me I've done 100 episodes.
Wow. Congratulations. That's a big milestone.
Yeah. So I was doing them every 2 weeks to start with. And then they're sort of vaguely week over the last year.
So when you look back, we think about, I always tell when I work with students or clients that you're not going to like the sound of your voice when you first record your podcast. So just know that. But your 10th is going to sound better than your first, and your 50th is going to sound better than your 10th. So looking back, how would you say you've grown as a host since you started the show?
I'd like to think I've always been quite informal. So there's no sort of rigid questions.
Yeah.
So I have done a few panels now where I've had sort of more than one guest. I've had sort mm-hmm. of three or four guests on the screen at the same time. And so I had my interviewing skills have had to kind of adapt in yeah. that way. And I was talking to somebody the other day who said, I do give people time and I make sure that everybody sort of gets to speak kind of thing. And that's really important to me, is because I've listened to some podcasts where the host doesn't let yeah. the guest actually answer any questions, which Same, is very yeah. annoying. So I try
That's
not
a pet
to do
peeve
that.
For
I
sure,
do.
Yeah.
So yes, I do like to make sure that the guest has the space, really.
How is the dynamic different when you are doing it live? Because, you know, obviously there's a lot to think about, you know, even something as simple as making sure your kid is working properly, that there's nothing in your background, that you won't be disturbed. So I'm curious how you've had to adjust to be ready to have a quality production once you hit that record button and you're now live across all platforms.
Well, I just make sure that obviously I give myself plenty of time to set up. When I used to do the recorded version, I used to be in another room yeah. and I had a blackboard, which stupidly, rod for my own back, I would write the name of the guest and their website yeah. or their contact details on the bottom. Yeah. And so every single time, and then some days I'd go, oh my God, I forgot to do the board. And so like 10 minutes before I was meant to be gone, I have to wipe the board yeah. clean and put the new name on it. So I don't do that anymore. Yeah. So now that I'm live, it's as simple as I possibly can make yeah. it. So I'm literally on my kitchen table. I know that the background is relatively clear. My niece bought me a lovely sign, which actually you can't see what it says, but it says on air.
Oh, great.
So that's, you know, it just, that's it. That's all I have to do. I've got a sort of a wooden desk with the light attached to it. So I just set it up, I plug in the mic, and obviously beforehand I have to set up the StreamYard. I make sure that I've got the website that of my guest and maybe some visuals to put on an overlay that we can talk about. So I kind of have everything set up. I have to make sure that I've done my research, mm-hmm. that I know who I'm talking to, I know what questions that I would like to ask
yeah.
so that when I do hit record, yeah, I hit live, yeah. it kind of comes, there's a countdown. And then it's the first few moments are always the worst though, because I never get the introduction right. I kind of bumble over yeah. that. And then the end as well, when you say goodbye, that always feels a bit icky.
Yeah.
So yeah, apart from that, I keep it as simple as possible.
The dynamic is so different because I've been on a couple of live interviews as well, but there's an increased need to be really present and attentive and curious and focused on your guest when you're in live mode. Do you sense there's also a buzz and excitement about it, I would imagine, as well. But how is the energy different than maybe a recorded session where you really have to be on for the entire duration of the recording?
Yeah. Well, I suppose it is that exactly, isn't it? That you have to be engaged. You have to be in the moment.
Yeah.
You can't, it's, you know, before we went, you clicked record, you were saying, well, we can stop. If you say anything that you don't want to say, yeah. we can go back. I can re-record that. And it was the same. That's what I used to say to my guests when I was being, you know, when I was doing the recordings. Whereas, you know, I don't get that opportunity. And also there's the added extra of people putting in comments and making sure that you go through and everybody that's made a comment kind of gets seen on the screen or whatever. And it's only half an hour. Yeah. So it's, it all goes so fast. Yeah. So there isn't a, there isn't enough time for the energy to drop. It's from the moment it goes live, it's you're on. And I love that. And maybe that's why I always preferred theatre than working on film, to actually get on a stage at the beginning of a performance, go through that whole journey and get off at the end. Whereas, you know, when you're filming, it's cut here, stop there, let's relight, do that again, you know, and it's just, yeah, I do prefer the live.
And there's something about the immediate reaction. You get it in theater, obviously you get it from the audience, but in a live environment, you imagine you would get it from either from the comments or the engagement of the people watching, at a minimum from your guests. And there's something about that immediate feedback that must feel good as well.
Yeah, no, I love it. Yeah, yeah, there's no going back. There's no...
So
it is what it is.
And then once you're done, maybe just a little peek into what that post-production process looks like. At the time you're going live, I imagine it's on YouTube and any other social channels?
It goes to LinkedIn.
Okay.
So it's live on LinkedIn and YouTube.
Okay.
And so once the recording's done, and then you do, then that's the kind of, oh, you come off, you're just like, and then, gosh. And then I literally download it. So I watch it and I sit and wait for it to download. Okay. And then I'll go through and make sure that I've captured everything. It's kind of captured everything. And then I go for a walk. I go for a wander or whatever, and I come back to it later. And I will upload it to, I then put it into iMovie, actually, so that I can take all those, the dead air or the stuff that doesn't, it's not relevant to the audio audience. And then I'll put it through that, and then I'll upload it. I'll take the audio, and then eventually it gets onto my audio platform, which is Podbean.
And then from a promotional standpoint, which of the major social channels are, do you see the most engagement in when you publish and promote it?
I suppose it's LinkedIn, really. Okay. So, yeah. And I think I prefer LinkedIn. I seem to have quite a big, relevant network there to what I'm producing, to the stuff that I'm producing. In the early days, when I was doing the creativity stuff and I was doing the recordings, I was talking to people that there was a bigger Facebook presence then. And I was kind of utilizing some of the actors I knew or people that had a little bit of a kudos to them. And so the Facebook was quite important at that point. But now it's quite niche in that it's sort of speaking for entrepreneurs and business leaders, whoever, doing presentations and that kind of thing. It's more relevant to a LinkedIn audience. So that's kind of where I promote it first. I will take snippets out. So I'll go through in while it's in iMovie, and I'll take out clips, and then I will promote, especially when it then when it goes live on audio, then I will promote it again with a clip, and that I will put onto Instagram and Facebook as well. And sometimes I will put stuff onto TikTok if I feel like it.
There's so many platforms to manage. It's a bit overwhelming. And I may be showing my age sometimes, but I just feel like it's so hard to keep up, because it's like you feel like as much work as it takes to get the production done, to get the scheduling done, to book the guests, that's only half the battle, because once it's out, you then have to be your own, you know, P.T. Barnum and just kind of do the promotion, because no one else is going to really care about it as much as you do. And I've, you know, been seeing that over the years with this show, you know, just really, I have to be the one to put in the extra legwork to promote it, to find different channels, to try different tools, to try different platforms. Because it's interesting, because each platform has its own audience. And, you know, obviously, to your point, LinkedIn has its own audience. But yeah, it's just, to all indie podcasters out there without a team, you know, kudos to you, because it is a lot of hard work.
It is. And I don't do nearly enough, I don't think. You know, I could do more. And it's such a shame that I've got such a huge back catalogue of some fantastic interviews and they're just kind of sitting there now, which is great. You know, people can go and find them. But unless I promote them, people won't know they're there. So that is difficult. So trying to work around work as well and sort of give it the time that it deserves is hard. It's difficult.
Yeah, a lot of times there's something to be said for sharing back catalog episodes or republishing or resharing episodes, because there could be, you'll have a whole new slew of listeners who just found you recently and they have no idea that you've spoken to these people as well. So I think anything you can do to make the back catalog more available, I'm finding is helpful for people who are just discovering you for the first time.
Yeah, I do love, when I have time, I do love to go back and do like a best of.
Yeah.
So I'll go back and take clips. So if I did one for on the marketing, so anybody that I'd interviewed in marketing and I brought them all together and put them in a best of kind of thing. So yeah, and from the speaking, one of the questions I ask is what makes a good speaker good and a bad speaker suck? And so I took all the snippets of those answers and put those into like a compilation.
Yeah.
So yeah, those ones are great to do. But as you say, it just takes time.
Yeah. So a couple of questions as we get to the top of the hour that I like to ask every guest. The first is, what's something you've changed your mind about recently?
Recently?
Or at any, it doesn't have to be recently.
At any time, what have I changed my mind about? I don't want to be a fashion designer anymore. I want to be an actor.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, complete U-turn in the career front, I suppose. That was something I changed my mind about. But yeah, I can't think of deciding that I didn't want to go back to my pre-lockdown self. That was something I'd really changed my mind about as well, that I really wanted to pursue this as a business. It doesn't have my name, it's a power to speak, and it's an umbrella that I can bring other things into and really kind of build on it. So that was a big decision. That was something I changed my mind about.
Do you ever think about what your life would look like if you had remained a fashion designer?
Oh God, no. Oh no. I can't even think what it would have been like.
It's very interesting because there's that movie Sliding Doors, and there's these moments in life where you make one seemingly small decision and then you just kind of just see how it just changes drastically the course of your life.
Yeah.
And then with you with starting the podcast as well, because many people tried new hobbies and tried a bunch of things that they just stopped once they were able to return back to work. And so kudos to you for continuing, because that was feels like one of those moments where you tried something new, push yourself out of your comfort zone, and then it just became, you know, what this beautiful thing that it is now.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been quite a journey, actually, when I think about it. No, it's lovely to talk about it as well, because I don't get to talk about the podcast very much.
Yeah.
And I kind of forget sometimes that I actually do it, that it's actually part of what I do.
Well, it's so fascinating to see how your life journey has taken you on this path. But if you think about, you know, even putting on those little performances when you were a child, you know, just this idea, you have this need for self-expression and using your voice and the acting and the creativity. So it all feels like it all began to be a part of who you are. So it's just inevitable that anything that you would do in the future would be an extension of that. And so it's obviously you can only see that looking backwards, because you wouldn't have been able to see that, predict that you would end up as a podcaster.
No, who knew?
But even now, between the teaching and helping people find their voice, this is all seems like it's all not only expressing yourself, but helping other people to express themselves and express their ideas and express their voices as well. So
yeah.
It's amazing to see. And I don't know if it's something that you think about, but when you look back, you know, there's probably a long list of people whose lives you've changed for the better.
Oh, that would be nice. I hope so. I can remember going into a pub a few years back, and this young woman came bouncing up to me, said, "Jackie." I said, looked at her and said, "Yes."
Yeah.
She said, it's me. It's, and I can't remember her name. She said, "You used to teach me."
Oh.
I mean, she was working in the pub, but she had gone on to do, she was, yeah, I don't know if she was a drama student or something.
Yeah,
she was, yeah, amazing.
That's
amazing.
Really.
I'm actually teaching. See, I never thought I'd go back to act as an acting coach, but I had the opportunity and to start teaching stunt trainees how to act.
That's interesting.
So that was something I started this year with me and another couple of tutors that sort of help. We go up to Pinewood Studios, which is lovely. Mm. But it's amazing to watch those guys, because they come in on a Monday and we do a 5-day course with them, which they need to have as part of their stunt training.
Yeah.
And they're used to jumping off high buildings and doing car crashes and horse falls and all of that. But they come in on a Monday morning and they are so scared.
Which is funny to think about a stuntman being terrified. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely terrified. And these are world champion boxers, world champion athletes. They're athletes. And by the end of the 5 days, they are transformed. Mm. I mean, it's amazing to watch them go through the kind of, again, the penny drop moment of, oh my God, I can do this. Because they spend time on a set with actors, yeah. watching actors do their job and thinking, oh my God, how did they do that? Like I did, yeah. you know, when I was a fashion designer. And yeah, they come out on a Friday going, that was amazing. And some of them actually now are thinking of going into, you know, ditching the stunts yeah. and going into acting, which is lovely.
You're seeing that a lot more. You're seeing a lot of these MMA stars who are, you know, realize they can't be taking the beating like that for the rest of their lives, you know, and oh, they're trying to move right. into something else, sports figures who retire, trying to think about. So you do see more. I saw a clip of Tom Cruise, like, doing his own stunt. He's like 60 now, but there's a scene where he rode a motorcycle off a cliff and then pulled a parachute. I don't know if you've seen this, but he apparently did it. He trained for like 6 months and he's a bit out there anyway, but it's just kudos to him at his age to always upping the quality of what he did. Because yeah. it's something people look at more closely now with these 4K movies. You can see every detail. So you can kind of see when absolutely. The stunt person's in there and when it's not. And I think you're seeing more of these actors feeling like, well, maybe we need to make, you know, I need to be more involved in this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that the stunt profession is sort of cottoning onto that yeah. now, is that their stunt people need to be able to act.
Yes.
They need to be able to do that. That's another string to their bow, yeah. really.
This is a bit of a self-reflective question, but what do you think is the most misunderstood thing about you?
Oh, gosh, I'm sure there's loads of things. What's misunderstood about me? I think people think I'm very confident. Mm, yeah. And actually, I'm not really.
Yeah.
And I don't, not that I'm acting, yeah. you know, this is me, this is who I am. But I think in my own space, in my own world, I still have those little imposter syndrome yeah. things. That little voice in my head says that I'm not good enough, I shouldn't be here, you know, yeah. they must have made a mistake. Why are they calling me?
Yeah, I feel like we all do that as creators. We have that imposter syndrome. I've heard even Oprah Winfrey has imposter syndrome, so it's something that's common. But clearly, anyone listening or watching this can track your journey throughout your life to see that you've essentially just followed your passion throughout your life, and it's led you to this amazing career in acting and teaching, and then now subsequently into podcasting and helping other people find their voice. So clearly, it appears to me that you're doing what you love, and you still have an enthusiasm for it, and it lights you up. So I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story and your journey with us.
Oh, thank you. It's been lovely. And as I say, it's just so nice to have the opportunity to talk about the podcast. So yeah. thank you for that. It's been great.
So for the listener and the viewer who want to learn more about what you're working on, where's the best place for them to connect with you?
They can go and check out my website, which is powertospeak.co.uk. And they can have a look at all the tabs there. I'm in the process of putting together a speaker page because I'm hoping to get on more stages myself as a speaker and talk about what it is that I do and how I do it. So that's not there at the moment, but it will be. But obviously the podcast is on there. So the podcast can be found there or on the YouTube channel, Power to Speak YouTube channel. Or people can come and find me on LinkedIn, okay. at Jackie Goddard, Power to Speak. And they can connect with me there and I'd be happy to have a chat.
Yeah, and you'll be sending all those links to me. And so I'll make sure everything is listed in the show notes for this specific episode. So it'll be
fabulous. That's great, Harry.
So I appreciate you again, Jackie, taking time. Thanks again to Ben for making this amazing introduction. It's nice to know that you're connected with a network of people that just by virtue of an introduction, you know, it's going to be a great conversation. So I appreciate him connecting us as well.
Absolutely. And I'm so looking forward to turning the tables on you, Harry, and yes. having this, finding out what it is that you do in between podcasting.
Yeah, there's a lot. That'll be a fun conversation. I'm looking forward to that as well. So
excellent.
Thanks again, Jackie, for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Always appreciative of my guest's time. I never take that for granted. I know an hour is valuable time, and I'm so grateful they were able to come on and share their journey with you. As a reminder, if you are ready to get your podcast off the ground and don't know where to start, sign up for Podcast Blueprint 101 and use promo code PBHD50 for half off the price. For a complete picture of everything that's happening in the world of podcasting and all the companies making moves, visit thepodosphere.com and create your own pod stack today. podcast production and marketing provided by Fullcast. Visit fullcast.co and click the play button to learn the five pillars of a successful podcast that every business owner needs to know prior to launching. As a reminder, if you enjoyed this show or past episodes, you can show me some love by leaving a rating and a review at ratethispodcast.com/podcastjunkies, and I'll be sure to read those out on a future episode. Intro and outro music composed by Cedar and Soil. Visit cedarsoil.com for his full catalog. Tune in next week for a conversation with yet another fascinating podcaster as we dig deep, learn about their show, and what makes them tick. Thanks for all you do to support this show across all our socials. I truly appreciate it. Talk to you next week.